This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Even when he was a small boy, Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov never imagined any other career for himself than that of a naval officer. It was in his blood. Most of the men in his family had had Navy careers. But Nikolai's musical gifts were also evident. By the time he began cadet school, he was already a fairly good pianist and an enthusiastic, if unpolished, composer. When he was 17, his piano teacher introduced him to Mili Balakirev, Alexander Borodin, and Modest Mussorgsky. Rimsky-Korsakov fell under Balakirev's spell immediately, and his musical gifts began to take on a greater importance. He continued his naval career for a while. He even managed to get appointed inspector of military bands, but he had already taken his first important step toward becoming a real composer. Along with Cesar Cui, those composers became the Mighty Handful and changed the course of Russian music forever. During his time in the Navy, Rimsky-Korsakov traveled around the world, visiting the Near East, Asia, and even the United States. But it was through the work of his friend Borodin that Rimsky-Korsakov was first exposed to the musical world east of St. Petersburg, which led him, inevitably, to the 1001 Arabian Nights. The tales of the Arabian Nights were first collected in the 13th century during the Islamic Golden Age, but it wasn't until the 1880s that translations of the stories first began appearing in Europe. They were hugely popular and helped spark a wave of interest in Orientalism, especially in Imperial Russia. Each collection had its own version of the tales, but they all have the same basic framework. The Sultan Shahryar has become convinced that women cannot be trusted, so he marries a succession of young women and has them all executed after the first night so they can't dishonor him. When he marries Scheherazade, though, she manages to keep herself alive by telling the Sultan stories that hold his interest with a different cliffhanger each night. After 1001 nights, the Sultan admits he was wrong, and he and Scheherazade live happily ever after. When Rimsky-Korsakov began thinking about writing a piece of music based on the Arabian Nights, his first challenge was the question of balance between the programmatic and the purely musical elements. How much Arabian Nights and how much just music? He wanted to tell a story, but he didn't want his listeners to be distracted by being glued to extra musical details. Initially, Scheherazade was going to be a completely abstract symphony inspired by the tales, but it soon became clear that he needed some kind of overall structure. He chose four tales to serve as inspiration for individual movements, and then wrote four tone poems connected by some basic themes, portraying the spirit rather than the action of each tale. Rimsky-Korsakov wrote in his memoirs that in composing Scheherazade, I meant the hints conveyed by the titles to direct the listener's fancy but slightly on the path which my own fancy had traveled. All I had desired, he wrote, was that the listener, if he liked my piece as symphonic music, should carry away the impression that it is beyond doubt an Oriental narrative of some numerous and varied fairy tale wonders, and not merely four pieces played one after another and composed on the basis of themes common to all four movements, end quote. He sets the scene by drawing musical portraits of the Sultan and Sultana in the opening bars. The Sultan's theme is appropriately loud and brutal. Things begin to soften as fairy tale chords in the woodwinds introduce the seductive and flattering voice of Scheherazade, portrayed by the violin. We've heard from the main characters, now the symphonic suite can begin. The first movement, The Sea and Sinbad's Ship, is broad and majestic. It's dominated by the Sultan's motif, but the Scheherazade violin returns in a manner that suggests she is doing more than just telling stories. The dreamy ending suggests that there is more to come, and the second movement begins with Scheherazade's theme in a form that's almost a free-form cadenza, as if she's making up the tales on the spot, which she may well be. After her brief introduction, the bassoon leads off with a wistful theme. It's the tale of the Calendar Prince. The oboe and then the violins take the melody, changing its character each time until the Sultan intrudes. Leading to one of Rimsky-Korsakov's most imaginative orchestral episodes, a clarinet recitative over the free-form strumming of plucked strings. Is Scheherazade improvising again? The tale resumes with more fanfares, followed by a scherzo that falls somewhere between Berlioz's Queen Mab and the Sorcerer's Apprentice. The fanfares return, announcing another free-form passage, but this time the bassoon takes the lead. And the movement ends with a return of the Sultan's theme, as if he's demanding to hear more. The tender third movement spins the tale of the young prince and princess. Scheherazade has her say here as well. But it's the love theme that brings this tale to its warm and gentle close. The finale opens much as the first movement did, with the contrast of Sultan and Sultana. Though this version is more elaborate, the pace and the energy pick up because this movement is actually three tales in one: Festival at Baghdad, The Sea, and The Ship Breaks Against a Cliff Surmounted by a Bronze Horseman. The Calendar Prince returns. And there's music that invokes images of the whirling dervish. The main characters all reappear in music that gets increasingly agitated. The Sultan returns, perhaps to make his final proclamation. But appropriately enough, it is Scheherazade who has the last word. Her melody slips lower and lower, as perhaps the nightgown slips off her shoulder. And the music climbs slowly, slowly into the heavens. As she heads into what may be the first secure night's sleep she's had in almost 3 years. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.